May Brussels in Carmel, California. This is tape number 366, December the 8th, 1978, and this is side one. And we'll be talking part two. This is part two of the series on the People's Temple. For those of you that have a dialogue conspiracy, number 282, that goes back to August the 15th, 1977. That was a year and a half ago. I did a tape on mind control. This is part one of Son of Sam. And by way of introduction, I explained how the United States government not only tested for 25 years, spending $25 million, the use of the mind and behavior modification. At least that's the amount the CIA spent. That doesn't include Navy intelligence, Army intelligence, National Institute of Mental Health, and so forth. But this is money that was spent for changing behavior, and it was called tests. But the tests stopped, and then the application begins after 25 years of testing, then the application begins on these programs. And that's an important part of understanding this problem of mind control and the use of manipulating people. Once you discover the formula for Coca-Cola or aspirin, you stop putting it together, and then you begin applying it. And that was the purpose of the test, was to find methods of operation that would be useful in the future for political purposes. And I talked about the mind test preceding the explanations about who David Berkowitz, the Son of Sam, was. And I quoted from my very first article that I ever published on the American assassins, the way that they're under mind control and are given a zombie appearance. And this was particularly true of Jack Ruby, whose memory was erased, and Sirhan Sirhan. Not very many people have seen Arthur Bremer at all to see his state of mind, but he obviously was under some kind of control from the time he shot George Wallace. He had that silly grin, and he hasn't even screamed or asked for a new trial, even though there were multiple bullets in Laurel, Maryland, and he couldn't have been the only assassin. He doesn't seem to be kicking up much storm, and nobody's there defending his interests yet. But the type of American assassin that I was talking about fits the description of Dan White, the man who is now in jail, who killed Mayor George Moscone in San Francisco. And he told his wife he thought he did something. He met her right afterwards in a church, that something went wrong. And when he was told that Harvey Milk was dead and George Moscone were dead, he said, "Oh, that's too bad." And he, obviously from the interviews about him, and very, very few people can get to see him. He's isolated. And I described in my first published article, our American assassins are hired as decoys. They're either killed or isolated in their cages, and they're separated from every other person in the prison. And that's true of Dan White right now in San Francisco. But in case any of you don't have that tape and can't afford to get it or can't get it at this time, that's tape number 282. I said there's a minister in California who is skilled, has moved down to Guyana. He has a $1 million missionary. His name is Jim Jones. He's tied to a lot of politicians in California. He's a father of thousands of people in the church. He calls himself their father. He has acquired at least 25 pieces of property in Ukiah, California, and in Mendocino. He has more than $500,000 in California and $1 million in Guyana. Now, that million in Ghana from 1977 to 1978 has grown to 13 million, 7 million, 7 to 10 million in Swiss banks in Zurich and in Panama and in other countries, and $3 million in cash down there, in addition to $500,000 of diamonds and gold. I underestimated it quite a bit. I said those of you who heard my dialogue conspiracy the week before, that was number 281. I had talked about right-wing churches funding missionaries, that the church was a front for missionaries. See, this is a wonderful way to have assassination teams, because the FBI and the Justice Department can come in and say, "You have the right to your own religion. We can't investigate." I talked about that school for assassins in Mexico that I referred to many times, and believe that once the cover was blown in 1970 in Oaxaca, Mexico, that the School for Assassins could be moved down to Guyana, and this would be what Jim Jones was operating. I wrote this these notes for that particular tape. I'm referring to them again, and you can hear the tape. This news this week, December the 5th, an article that Jim Jones ran a school for assassins that had been brainwashed and programmed under a mind-control program, and this was a school for assassins a year and a half later. It's in the news. I said the reason Jim Jones is acting as a minister is that he can get people to sign confessions for him. And they did sign blank pieces of paper. They signed confessions to crime, various members of the church, and they could be used in any way they wanted. These confessions included molesting their own children, and they signed confessions that they would conspire to kill the president or overthrow the government. Now, that's very nice, because then as soon as these people are dead, there's notes such as the one pinned on Jim Jones talking about communism, or his aide, this Marie Casares, the white Russian, father, member of the Greek Orthodox Church. She's the one who gave $500,000 in gold and diamonds or whatever money to two men who were fleeing. Mark Lane saw them going down the road with his footlocker, out of which he'll get his salary later, or he's getting it at the present time. And the message was given to the Russian embassy. The people that are dead or the outside people make the grand claims that Jim Jones was a Marxist and wanted to give it to the Russians. The Russians are not involved in national narcotics traffics, international, such as the intelligence communities and organized crime. And they wouldn't even touch Jim Jones. He wanted to give them money. The politicians, the Democratic Party, all accepted his votes and his money. The Russians said, give it to the United Nations. And they didn't even want his money, and he hadn't been to Cuba with these people. And the goal was allegedly that he wanted to move them to Soviet Union. I'm sure they wouldn't let him in any more than they let Lee Harvey Oswald into Cuba, knowing who he was. I talked about on that tape in August of 77 that this camp was like a Nazi Germany concentration camp, that families had to accuse other members of their family of doing crimes, and when they were being hit with boards and fists and so forth, they would yell, hit them harder. I said that Jim Jones uses deprivation, humiliation, poverty, and pain. That is what I said in August of 77, and that people there have to stay. They can't leave. December the 5th, 1978, there were articles in the newspaper again saying that Jim Jones said, once I get them there, there is no way to get out, and that was absolutely true. I think only several were able to escape and tried to expose what was going on. One was Debbie Layton Blakey, and she's one of the people that had informed the State Department and the FBI and journalists very clearly of what was going on down there. Well, some of you have that tape, so I won't go into it any further, but that's the Jim Jones I was talking about. It's interesting that Mae Brussel, sitting here in Carmel, California, can make these connections of programming people and having assassination teams and having this unlimited money that obviously can get through the IRS. But the government officials can't understand what's going on down there. Just a woman sitting in Carmel Valley can figure this thing out, but all the powers that be can't protect those 1,200 people that were down there, or the 910 that were slain, and then the coterie of the guards around them. Before I go into the outline of Jim Jones, I just want to make comments about several things that are in the news this week. One is that another Roman Catholic archbishop died. He's from Hanoi, Trinh Nguyen Hiu. He was at the conclave in August of 1978, and in October 1978, he helped elect John Paul I and John Paul II, and there was an announcement by the Vatican that he died following a brief illness. That is the sixth, I believe, of the high officials, including John Paul I, that have died within a six-month period. There seems to be an epidemic of these high religious leaders of the Catholic Church. Granted, he wasn't young, he was 79 years old, but it was a brief illness, and people very close to the Vatican seemed to be going. So we'll just think about it and see how many more there are in the near future. Representative Steiger died this last week. Now it's December the 5th. He was a GOP activist. He was active in the Young Republicans Party and got a lot of state and local and civic awards, but he was considered an expert on House rules, and he worked on the Rules Committee in 1976. At the GOP National Convention, he's the person who led the forces of President Ford, who tried to head off any attempt to permit the Ford delegates to vote instead for California Governor Ronald Reagan. Now, that's important, very important, because I have said since 1972 that Reagan was really meant to front for the Stanford, what he would call his kitchen cabinet, would be the Stanford czars, white Russians, the most extreme fanatical political right. And Reagan is getting too old to be president after the next election. And it's very important that the surviving Republicans be staunch Reaganites and be in his camp. So therefore, that any deaths or voting records of any people in Congress that would oppose him, I mentioned before the senator, the race in Virginia, where Mr. Warner won, Secretary of the Navy, a staunch Reagan man, is now in the Senate from Virginia after a very close count of votes in the last election and after the opponent who beat him in the primary was killed in a plane crash. So whenever you see the death or near death of a congressman, it's as important to watch the Republican deaths as it is the Democratic deaths, particularly the Republican deaths. There's a near death of Senator Ted Stevens up in Alaska, in Anchorage, Alaska. His wife was killed and four other people were killed, and as of today, when I'm making the tape, he's still alive in critical condition. But there's also a lot of politics, as you know, going on in Alaska. Long article in the Washington Post just this week on Alaska shipping the oil to the Midwest oil pipelines as planned. Whether we'll be able to use it on the western coast or whether it's going to the Midwest, the routes of the oil are being decided now, and there are a lot of contenders there on how this oil is going to be shipped out or where it's going to go. And the contenders, of course, include Standard Oil in Ohio and the Alaskan oil going to Long Beach, California, or to Midland, Texas. There is now an oil glut, even though our prices of oil and gasoline are going to go up. And there's a decision that hasn't quite been finalized on the routes of the oil, and this may be a factor in the near death of Senator Ted Stevens. All of these plane crashes just may be coincidences, but some of these people are making major decisions that would make a difference of millions or billions of dollars to particular corporations as against another corporation. Therefore, you have to always consider that possibility and follow the information. An article in the San Francisco Chronicle, December the 5th, 1978, the money for People's Temple, the special money outside of the $3 million that's in Jonestown, in quotes, was never People's Temple money. It was money that Jim Jones secured in one way or another. Now, that either is from the Hughes Institute to affect our elections, to make assassination teams, to make sure that Reagan and company get in the next election, because I think one political assassination of a president is worth about $10 million. That's what it was worth at Watergate to try and kill Richard Nixon and make Spiro Agnew president. This money comes from another source. Now, it only comes from international narcotics or it comes from the intelligence, defense agencies, and the intelligence agencies and the FBI for the political assassinations, or it comes from health, education, welfare, and National Institute of Mental Health and the Division of Mental Health because of the payment for doing the mind control experiments. But actually, this large sum of money in Zurich and Panama has to be those assassination teams, and then these poor people were just set up to sign the confession slips and be the patsies. I would wonder about the $500,000 in gold and diamonds. It would be interesting for each person that died down there to interview the immediate family and see what family jewels were missing, because I read one article that even suggested that they took the gold from the people, and I wonder if one reason we couldn't see the bodies and they're going to cremate them and destroy them is that, identical to Nazi Germany, they could be even removing the gold from the teeth of these people and taking it from them. They had $500,000 worth of gold and diamonds. It's hard to believe that the people who went down to Guyana took that kind of jewelry with them, or even had it. I doubt if they even had it. I think some of this cash was being melted in or turned into gold and diamonds so that they could then take it to international markets, in addition to the $100 of American bills that was put in stockpiles and filing cabinets, $3 million in $100 bills. I'm very anxious to go into detail on the use of Mark Lane in all of this, where he fits in, and also the murder of George Moscone in San Francisco. But before I do that, I promised last week that I would give you the working outline that I'm doing on this Guyana story, because it is so big and it's so fresh. I made this outline last week, and I think I'm going to go over that with you now, so that each week as we talk about Guyana, we won't be doing it every single week, but I will be referring to it from time to time. I'm going to give you my file outline on a specific case as it's coming down, because while I've referred to much of my research in the past, then you can follow my train of thinking, because the purpose, of course, with this, with many young people, is to teach them how to solve these crimes in the future or in the present, or look back at the past. So this is the way I've broken down my outline, which I've enclosed for you this week, the sheet, and then you can do your own work and maybe find some old envelopes or folders, make folders out of cardboard or whatever, and keep some articles or information as you see from the article in these outlines. I've divided the general subject of Jim Jones so far into seven Roman numerals, and of course it's always open. It may end up that I'll have 40 sections before I'm through, 40 different Roman numerals, but basically I've opened it up to seven sections, and in there I can add more. Right now I have 69 different manila envelopes, but it will go up, say, to 120, and if it fits into a section where 48 is, I can call it 48A, 48B, and slip the information into those sections. But section one in here is motives and what went wrong. Now, in there, the first envelope, I keep the chronology of dates of Jim Jones' life, when Leo Ryan went down, information on the People's Temple, every date that is pertinent to this event. Even Harvey Milk was fired. He resigned, rather, from the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco, November the 10th. I put that there, and then I put down the date that Congressman Ryan was down there, and the day that Jim Jones moved from Ukiah down to Brazil, the date he moved from, not Ukiah, from Indiana, the dates he was in Bloomington, Indiana, because I mentioned that city is an important place because of Tom Charles Houston and Emily and William Harris from the SLA story, and Angela and Gary Atwood and other people, some of the hit team from Indiana, the dates that are involved, an overlay of the dates of the movement of the UCLA school, when it was started, when it was conceived, when it was stopped, when he moved down there and got his compound, and so forth. That is one file on chronology. The next is the purpose of Guyana location. I put a question mark there, but in my own mind, I'm asking, was it a center for mind control, and was it a center for assassination teams? Now, that was what I thought was the motive of the Guyana compound as of last week, just before I had done this tape. I think it was last Thursday, and within this 1 week, there have been articles that there were assassination teams that were set up there, and that they were under the mind control, that they have been treated as assassins and treated with mind control projects as assassins. And the information that comes out that confirms what I thought was the original purpose of this People's Temple down there, or even from the very beginning, gets filed into section number two under section A, evidence of this. Three is what went wrong, why the mass death suit necessary. Now, in that section are the ideas that I've shared with you, that they, in case they discovered what was going on, they would have to kill everybody there, that nobody would be able to know if there were intentions to do electrodes or electroshock or records kept of deprivation and so forth. If somebody was going to come down and intrude, what would the contingency be? What if they had the Nike base in California, or somebody could break into a Tuscadero or certain parts of Vacaville prison right now? where they're currently still using what they tested up to 1967, what would they have to do to conceal? They must have a contingency plan. And that is the section one, number four, is the contingency was made at least a year in advance. Of course, from the moment they broke ground, when he opened up his place in Ukiah, there was a guard and police dogs and a tower and fences. You can see pictures of it. An armed compound. Now, how does that differ from, say, Albert Schweitzer's clinic in Africa, medical clinic that Mark Lane compares this to? Well, all you have to do is drive up to Albert Schweitzer's clinic and say, hello, I came to see your clinic, and he says, come right in. Nobody was kept there under armed guards. Nobody was locked up. There were no police dogs, and there were no prisoners. They came for medical care, period. He was helping the poor, and that's what he was there for. And he had a reputation for helping the sick and the poor, and there's no comparison to this. Albert Schweitzer was an organist and a physician and gave concerts in Europe and down there, organ recitals, and there was no mass punishment and no standing in front of microphones so that everyone could hear you screaming, and there were no people getting up on the stage and having their penis banged with a big bat in front of people because of some sexual problem or belief of a deviation in front of the whole group. There was no humiliation or pain, and it was an open place. And that's the difference between Mark Lane's comparing Albert Schweitzer's clinic to this. So the contingency was made down there. In the particular case that anyone arrived, not only did they have the dogs, the guards, the isolation, the airport, the boat harbor tied up, but they had to have the suicide plans. The contingency was to destroy all evidence except a few notes linking them to Russia and socialism and communism, destroy everything else, destroy all the people. That was the contingency plan made at least a year ago when he moved from San Francisco down there. And then under cast of characters, that may go right now, it may go from 20 to 200 people, personalities of Mr. and Mrs. Stone and Jim Jones and Mark Lane and the Katsaras woman, everyone who's important to the story. Collect as many pieces of the biography, how many worked in mental hospitals, how many handled the mentally sick, the nurses, how many doctors' names come up. Undercast of characters may have its own division, and they say up to 40 or 80 people that are important to this story. Section 2, contingency plans, made all along. This had nothing to do with Jim Jones' son. That's the cover story under the Section 1. But Section 2 is the actual planning of the operation in case the invasion took place, the news media or a member of Congress or law enforcement or the military came in. Now, the excuse for triggering all this off was that Mr. and Mrs. Stone wanted their son, that Jim Jones was supposed to be the father of this little boy, and they wanted him back. And Jim Jones had said, if you come and take this son, this little boy of mine, then everybody here has to die. 1,200 people have to die if you take him. Well, Congressman Ryan went down there. He went with the news media. He stayed overnight one night. He was leaving the next afternoon. The son didn't want to go with him. There was no son on the plane with him. And yet, the contingency was to die, and Mark Lane has admitted, and Charles Gary knew, that the plans were to kill all of these people. They knew that in advance, that this was the intention of Jim Jones, and it had nothing to do with the boy. The boy died down there. But he didn't die at the airport, he didn't leave, and he had no desire to leave. At least he didn't express it. So that is only a cover. So the contingency plans had been made, and then under Roman numeral 6, I have why the suicide plans, and of course, we know that the CIA, that Candy Jones was told to commit suicide, and she was going down and dive into a bed of rocks with shallow water. It was only her husband, her new husband, that saved her. He's now dead of cancer, Long John Neville, but he was able to save her, and the intent here was to murder. Jim Jones, according to Time, Newsweek, he was found dead, didn't commit suicide. He was shot in the head, but the gun was never found. If he commits suicide, the gun wasn't on the ground. The gun was never found, And we don't know how many people had gunshots in their head. Mark Lane said he heard 80 rounds, and Charles Gary said 3, and they were standing in the same place. But people had to line up and take the poison, and we don't know how many were dead because the Army, the United States Army, the Defense Department, refuses to do an autopsy to tell us, out of 910 people, if the others were shot in the head or in the stomach or what. We know how they were lined up in the concentration camps in Germany to die, but being as these people are lying on their stomach face down, it's hard to tell exactly. And because they're not having autopsies and because they waited 4 days to come in, all part of the contingency plan, we don't know how they died. But the books are coming out calling this strange cult of death. So we have the United States government studying suicide at UCLA, that school I referred to last week and I'll constantly be referring to, that I believe could be transferred to a place like Guyana. Then under 7, murder. How many were murdered? How many were forced to die? Who was found shot? They've admitted that 2 people were found dead, and they refused to do the autopsies. But what evidence? We know that they were forced to line up and take their poison or they would be shot. And then who lived? And then under this section is try to find as many names of the coterie around the black people, the 910 people who died. We call this the murder plot. How many were children? And we have to get some hard statistics in the months and years to come, because I don't know what age you call suicide. Is a 10-year-old a suicide, or a 7-year-old, or a 6-year-old? Or if a mother picks up a newborn baby and pours this in their mouth, is that called suicide? And if these people were part of the murder and then run away with the money and go down the alley, you know, and just take the money and leave the wife and baby to die, that must be murder. If you could grab a kid and save your kid and leave the money, that's a different circumstance. In this case, they left the kid and grabbed the money and went down the road. And then the drugs used for the suicide and murder. This is different than the drugs in the clinic, and or the narcotics, the chance that they were in an international drug running, or even with rifles, weapons, drug running in exchange for money and so forth. This is the drugs used on the compound. For example, I filed in here, where Mark Lane said he knew in advance that this could be coming down, that they would be drugged at lunch. So he took his own cough drops with sugar and picked up some supplies, I guess, at the Kennedy Airport in New York, going down to Georgetown, so that he wouldn't have to eat the food that the congressman ate, knowing that they were going to be drugs. That contingency plan includes the cyanide and the chloral hydrate, and the guns go under the murder, and that is the contingency section, section 2. Roman numeral 3 is Jim Jones. That's on Jones himself. His links and involvement with the U.S. government, the CIA, federal connections, and state connections. And under there, the psychological profile of Jim Jones, which is always the cover story, the media hype, which I wrote in that article, The American Assassins, the one I did for The Realist, singling him out. His father was gassed during World War I. His mother worked 16 miles away in a factory. His loneliness as a child, his giving his little eulogies for animals that died, etc., etc., etc. It goes on and on. This is the usual story. It never explains how he ends up being photographed with the wife of the president of the United States or running the housing commission in San Francisco and the high places that he took, considering that he was being injected and followed with a nurse constantly and was under the control of the same people himself as the people he was shipping down there. Then finances is always the modus operandi. That's the important thing, is how much money he had to buy property, how much money he had to buy the synagogues. He bought 2 synagogues, which is interesting, one in Indiana and one in San Francisco, for the location of his People's Temple, took over from a Jewish synagogue. Really a desecration, and again, it smacks of a certain Nazism. The whole operation was a Nazi operation, but they chose to go into the synagogues and turn them around. The finances, then Brazil. We talk about the boys from Brazil. This is the boys from Guyana. What did he do in Brazil, 1961 and 62? his relationships to the U.S. Embassy, his trips to Argentina. What was his modus operandi? How did he get down there? Who hired him in Brazil? Those questions are important. Where did he work in Brazil that he came back with $100,000 to put in the bank to open up the People's Temple in Ukiah? The next move was to Ukiah, California, with that $100,000 and the fence compound. Information about that. We'll continue with this on the second side of the tape about Ukiah on out down to Guyana. In 1972, we had Watergate. Now we have Corriegate.